I didn't mention in the intimations, but I will do so now, that if you haven't visited the Church of Scotland website or our Facebook page, I would encourage you to do so. You will discover that Dunfermline Abbey is part of the Lenten reflections, and I want to thank those of you who offered your hands last week. They are in the reflection and there, and it's an opportunity to begin to think a little bit about Mothering Sunday. And in that reflection, I mention the fact that there is no woman mentioned today. There's something amusing about Mothering Sunday when the gospel reading offers no sign of a woman. We have a familiar story with a reckless young man and his father's overindulgent, or at least that's what we think sometimes when we hear the story of three men. Have you ever wondered at why there are no women in the story? I didn't until the person who phoned me to ask me to do the reflection mentioned it, and I suddenly thought, oh, she's right. Where's the mother? Where are the sisters? How did they feel? Isn't the most equitable of the gospel writers in exploring human relationships, is it all the more noticeable that there are no women in the story? The writer of Luke can't normally be accused of ignoring women. It's he who introduces the story of Jesus through the presence of women. We hear the promise of God's justice in the song of Mary. Mary and Elizabeth are the bearers of the promise. He takes Jesus to meet widows and sinful women. Jesus finds a place of welcome in the home of Martha and Mary. He heals a crippled woman all before we reach this story. Then after this story, Jesus will speak out of a widow's offering. It's women who mourn and weep for Jesus as he journeys to the cross, because the disciples have all disappeared. Women who are with his body as Joseph of Arimathea takes it somewhere safe to rest until it can be prepared for burial. It's women who will be there at first light, ready to get on with their difficult task of mourning. And it will be women who will tell the disciples the news that Jesus has risen. The same writer is also responsible for the book of Acts. And while men form the initial group of apostles, the story that unfolds of the fledgling Christian community offers signs of women playing significant roles. So through the book of Acts, we encounter Priscilla, Tabitha or Dorcas, Mary, Rhoda and Lydia. The famous portrait of the loving father and the returning son depicts a woman in the background, but the gospel makes no mention. So where is she? Would she have made a difference to the way the story played out? Would the youngest son never have left? Would the oldest son have found his place at the table? The story of the father and his two sons picks up on Old Testament stories of fathers and their sons. So within the story of Jesus, we hear echoes of the relationships of Abraham and Isaac, of Isaac, Esau and Jacob, of Jacob, Joseph and his other sons. In each of these Old Testament stories, we hear of a father who's got it wrong, or sons who behaved badly, and possibly even both. So Abraham is prepared to sacrifice his son to assure God of his devotion. Jacob, who tricks his twin out of his father's blessing. And then Jacob again, who idolizes one child over all the others. In contrast to those stories, Jesus presents a father who is no fool and two sons who both fail to recognize the overflowing cup of grace from which they're invited to sup. I sometimes wonder if we hear the story of the loving father and his sons depending on where we find ourselves within family dynamics. If we're eldest children, do we judge the youngest for their reckless ways? If we're youngest children, are we envious of all that the eldest will have in the future? If we're only children, do we wonder at what we might have done if the attention of a parent was not focused solely upon us? Traditionally, our story is known as the story of the prodigal son, and yet the word prodigal never makes an appearance in the story. It's instead the remnant of an ancient footnote. That accidental title focuses our attention on only one of the three people within the story. And so we miss all of the relationships and the understanding of God's grace portrayed within the story. Of course, we're not to see the story of the father and his sons in isolation, because it sits in the midst of other stuff. And that other stuff will deepen our knowledge and understanding of where Jesus is drawing us as he tells the story. But first, let's look at the characters within the story. As I said, our common focus is that youngest son who appears to selfishly take all that he possibly can from his family and runs away. Once away, he falls into bad company and ends up at his lowest ebb, so low that the home he escaped from now seems the best place to return. It's worth knowing that within Jewish law, it was considered possible for a child to take their inheritance prior to their parents' demise. However, to do so would usually have seen that child working the land and providing for their parents. The fact that the youngest son sells his inheritance suggests something deeper about how he views the relationship with his father. It's a dead relationship, one to which he has no further responsibility. At the other end of the story, we meet the eldest son, who appears to have put up no objection to his youngest brother receiving his inheritance early. We don't meet this son until the father has embraced the youngest and welcomed him home to an honoured place and meal. And then the full anger and frustration of being the eldest plays forth. Feeling cut out, rejected, jealous, angry, the eldest son believes that his value has never been recognised. Caught between these two portraits of humanity is a loving father who wants to celebrate the return of those who have been missing and who values and enjoys the presence of those who were always there. It's a story that we can understand on so many levels. It speaks of our petty family jealousy and rivalries. Perhaps it speaks of the jealousy we feel when outsiders invade our church, take over our seats, and maybe even the roles we think we should have had. And no matter which son we discover ourselves to be, we're asked to recognise that there's a place within God's grace for us all. The story should also speak to our desire to marginalise people who do not fit our expectations. We struggle with the notion of God's freely given grace and declare some as prodigals. Instead, we're to recognise that some need the grace of restoration, reminding them of their humanity and worth, while others need the grace of imperfection, so that they may be loved for who they are. The central character of the Father speaks of a God who never gives up, never abandons, and never condemns. Does it matter that there are no women in the story? Of course it doesn't. For within the story, the presence of the loving father conveys the full range of parental emotions. Jesus has a habit of telling parables in a series, and in the midst of the series, we will meet male and female characters. This is one such story within a sequence, and it's a sequence of lost things. A lost sheep and the shepherd who searches. A lost coin and a woman who scours the house. Two lost boys and a father who waits and celebrates. Bruce Epperly writes in his commentary on the passage, "Lostness occurs in lots of ways. The lost sheep who simply wanders off stupidly and innocently, perhaps, like a toddler in the supermarket, pursuing something bright and beautiful and then finding herself alone and frightened. Like a lost coin, misplaced and out of sight. Like the poor and vulnerable, we would just as soon not see. Those forgotten by the wealthy, the government, political candidates and fellow citizens, often through no fault of their own, simply the accidents of birth, intelligence, poor parenting and poverty. And the lost son, who willfully turns his back on his parents' love and way of life, going into a far country, addicted, debased and discarded. Whether we are lost because of our stupidity, or lost because we've been misplaced, or lost because we willfully stand at a distance from the one who loves us, the Lord is whispering. Well, if you were listening to the story, you know he's doing more than whispering. He's thrown wide his arms. He's opened the door. He's wiping the tears. He's listening to the angry voices. Because there's a place within his grace for all. Amen.